Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the call-in talk show about health and natural medicine. I'm Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza. If you'd like to participate in the conversation about natural medicine, you can call us at 860-486-9487. That's 860-486-9487. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org. You can also check out my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at Fran Storch ND. So today we've got for you more basic concepts in naturopathic medicine. And here's a basic concept for you. It's called, what is removing obstacles to cure? So that's not exactly one of the six basic principles of naturopathic medicine. But it is a very basic concept. It is a very basic concept in naturopathic medicine. And it's sort of related to first do no harm, but it's more specific than that. So removing obstacles to cure, it's a lot. So if you are, for example, sometimes what will happen is somebody will come in and they unfortunately are addicted to cigarettes. They smoke cigarettes and they are having trouble quitting. And they come to me and they want help with their breathing. You know, they've got asthma or they've got emphysema, or they've got something wrong with them. And they want help with that. And they're smoking. Now, the obstacle to cure, obviously, there's a very difficult but obvious one, and that's that the obstacle to cure is that they're smoking cigarettes. So if you can get rid of something that's in the way of your healing, you're going to be a lot more likely to heal. It's kind of like you're trying to go on a straight path, and every time you go on this path, there's a huge stone in the way of the path. Well, you could find your way around the path, but what keeps happening is the stone sits there, it burrows in, plants grow around it, and every time you try to go on this path, the stone gets harder to get over because moss is growing fat in it because it's not a rolling stone. And so you can't get around the stone, and every time, and it's there. So really, the thing to do would be to get rid of the stone. So you find some people to help you, or you get a tool so you can break the stone apart, or basically you get rid of the stone and then you can have a straight shot through that path. So that's the kind of thing that we do. People do a lot of things to create obstacles to cure for themselves. So you can, again, so there's so many examples of this. For example, you might have somebody comes in, I have a lot of headaches. Oh, you have a lot of headaches. So addressing the headache palliatively would be to give them some kind of pain medicine. And in natural medicine, you have things that can help headaches. So for example, if somebody has a headache, you can give them massage. You can help them to reduce their tight muscles. You can have them take magnesium, which will calm their muscles. You can you can give them Feverfew, which is an anti-inflammatory, and it does help with pain and it can help to reduce headaches. But if they have something that's giving them a headache all the time, for example, it could be as simple as they're dehydrated. They don't drink enough water. So their obstacle to cure is that they don't drink enough water. They're coming to you and they're like, oh, my head hurts and give me some pain medication, but I don't like water. And you're like, ugh. but when the best thing that they could do is just drink some water. So like I said, people do that a lot. They create obstacles. A big one that we see is food intolerances. People being willing or unwilling to take certain items out of their diet. So people will come in, I have such gas and bloating. It's so terrible. Every day I wake up, my belly is really big and it gets even bigger throughout the day and my pants feel tight and I have a lot of gas and bloating. I'm belching. I have flatulence and I just can't get rid of it. What can you give me? And they want me to give them something. So I can give them deglycyrrhizinated licorice. I could have them take preparations that have simethicone, which is a silicone-related substance that makes gas bubbles slippery and easier to pass. I can give them all manner of carminative herbs. Carminative herbs are herbs that usually have volatile oils in them, and the volatile oils are somewhat irritating to the digestive system. Not so much that they're going to make you sick, but enough that they stimulate peristalsis. They stimulate your digestive system to move things along. And so if you take things with aromatic oils like oregano or anise or fennel or even cinnamon or ginger or cloves, oregano. These are all culinary herbs. A lot of culinary herbs actually help with digestion. How cool is that? They're also antimicrobial. How further cool is that? So you can give all kinds of herbs like that, and that is a good thing to do. It's not that that's a bad thing to do, because there's other reasons to give those herbs. Those herbs and spices have a lot of antioxidants, and they have a lot of nutritive properties to them. So they're a good thing to use anyway. But if the reason you're getting the gas and bloating is you're eating a food that just doesn't agree with you and your body just doesn't want to digest, you know, like one of the big bullies, shout out to Jillian Sarnotita, who uses that term, big bullies. If you're eating the big bullies, processed food, sugar, too much alcohol, too much caffeine, gluten, dairy, grains, those are the big bullies. If you're eating a big bully to excess, or if you're eating a food that you know upsets your stomach, and then you're coming to me and say, give me a pill to take away my digestive distress, well, wouldn't it be easier to just remove the food from your diet that's giving you an upset stomach? But sometimes you run into the obstacle to cure. The obstacle to cure in naturopathic medicine can be the same thing as in cycling, which is the biggest hill. Yeah, what's the biggest hill, yeah. Ron?
The biggest hill is the one that sits on top of your shoulders.
Yeah.
Mm.
Right. So that can also be the biggest obstacle to cure.
In life.
Yes, exactly. Isn't that interesting that life is like a bicycle?
Well, I've been saying that for years.
Or naturopathic medicine is like cycling? Maybe that's why I do them both.
It's all, you know, everything's connected.
Yeah, right.
That's the way I see it anyway.
Yeah. So the biggest obstacle to cure, of course, can be your own resistance. So what I would invite each of you to do is, if you've got something going on in your life and you want to heal from it, one of the things to look at is, are you standing in your own way? And so if you're standing in your own way, you might look in the mirror and you see that you're standing in front of yourself, which would be a very strange thing to see. But that may be what's going on. And if you're standing in front of yourself, you may not be able to heal yourself. So you have to be honest with yourself and say, gee, is there something I'm doing or not doing that's getting in the way of this thing that I want to change in my body? And that's what you have to look at. And those can be the hardest things to look at. I mean, sometimes what people do is they come to naturopathic physicians and they're just looking for a better pill because, you know, the conventional medicine is, they push basically pharmaceutical drugs and surgery. Drugs and surgery is basically the tools. And different kinds of chemical substances. And so in naturopathic medicine, we want to help you to live a life so that you can heal yourself. And so sometimes what happens is people come from the world of biomedicine and they come to naturopathic medicine expecting that it's going to be the same thing, except we're going to give you a better pill with less side effects. We do have a lot of nice pills that can help you with a lot of nice things. I took a few nice ones myself this morning. And so I can tell you I'll tell you what those are in a few minutes. But taking nice pills isn't even the beginning of helping you to heal. I have to say the basic thing, one of the most beautiful acronyms and systems that was put together was elucidated by the Seventh-day Adventists, and that's New Start. And if you do New Start, you're going to be fabulous. So New Start is, let's see. So New Start, N is nutrition, E is exercise, W is water, S is sunshine, T is temperance, A is air, R is rest, and T is it's time with spirituality. That's New Start.
Oh boy.
Right. So if you do all those things, that's really the basis of healing. Mm-hmm. You know, get outside, you know, get exercise, get good nutrition, drink your water. How simple is that? That's really how you help yourself heal. And if you do those things, then that basically takes out a lot of the obstacles to cure. So that's the thing to look at. What is your biggest obstacle to cure? And is it your own resistance? And once you accept that you are resistant to things, you can say, okay, this is what I'm resistant to. You can start seeing the things that you're resistant to. And little by little, you can say, all right, what am I ready to accept? What am I ready to be less resistant to? If you have a habit like cigarette smoking can be a very difficult, it's probably one of the most difficult habits to quit. Because the chemicals that are in cigarettes, the nicotine that's in cigarettes, they attach themselves to your cholinergic receptors. They attach themselves to a very specific neurotransmitter system in your body that's used in your entire autonomic nervous system. So that's your fight or flight and your rest and digest. You have receptors for that in your whole body for everything you do. So quitting nicotine can be very, very difficult. And if somebody comes in and they're wanting to quit smoking, I don't say, all right, throw out your cigarettes yesterday. I don't do that. Because I know it's that hard to quit. What I try to help people do is to add other healthy habits to their diet and their life before I ask them to quit smoking. One of the things that Dr. Mercola likes to talk about, if you look at Joseph Mercola online, he talks about people who are addicted to cigarettes having blood sugar issues, that they have they can be hypoglycemic. And so you help them regulate their blood sugar, you know, with things like healthy eating, eating your fruits and vegetables, eating your clean protein, not eating a lot of processed food. So you work on those things first. And then when you're feeling much better, then your craving for the cigarettes will be diminished and it'll be easier to quit. So you get all those healthy habits in. And then the other thing you do is try to get the person exercising, and the person's going to find that, gee, if I keep smoking, I can't breathe as well. So they'll be more motivated to smoke less. And because the exercise itself upregulates some of the neurotransmitters that make you feel good when you smoke cigarettes, you may not need the cigarettes as much. So that's an obstacle to remove that's difficult to remove. Sometimes obstacles to cure are hard to remove and you need help, and that's okay. And so naturopathic physicians, one of the things we can do is help you to find strategies so that you can remove those obstacles to cure and find things regardless of the situation, you know, that where we can help you fit something into your life that's going to help you with whatever stress is going on with you. And that's one of the things we do. We help you remove obstacles to cure. And we help to talk to you about what's actually going on in your life. And we spend the time with you to do that. So it's a good thing. All right. So that's a basic principle. I'm going to see if I can come up with some more basic principles, because we went through the 6 basic principles of naturopathic medicine. But there are other corollaries to that. And I'll try to bring up a few more interesting ones that you know, have a nice history and that we can talk about in naturopathic medicine. Okay, so the next thing is, I keep talking about my knee.
How is that knee?
you want to see it?
Yeah, I can see it. Okay. There it is. Pull it closer to the microphone and everyone will be able to see
it. Here
there
it is. So can you see? Yeah, there it is.
There it is. There's the
so
knee.
What's really cool is the bursitis seems to be way down. There was a little poochy pouch right here. And it's not doing that anymore. How cool is that?
So how'd you do that?
Oh, it was by magic. No, it wasn't by magic.
No.
I have a really good acupuncturist. So I got acupuncture. I got a series of acupuncture treatments. I'm going to have another one today. I'm looking forward to it. My heart goes out to if you are not a needle person, and people worry, the needles are going to hurt. And you know what? Sometimes, depending on where she's putting them, they do hurt a little bit going in. But I don't mind it. I don't mind acupuncture. I believe in acupuncture, and I know that I'm being helped by acupuncture. So, you know, shout out to Nicole, doing a good job. So I've had a series of acupuncture treatments. I'm not sure how many I've had at this point. It's, you know, it could be 5 or 6, something like that. It's very relaxing. Once the needles are in, you get to sit and relax, and I get a nap out of that that is different than if I were just to try to lay down on my own, because she knows I'm a nervous Nelly, and so she does my stress points, and she knows that I tire myself out, and so she does kidney yang and kidney yin points, and they really help me to chill out and relax. It's very nice, so that's really helpful. Most days I wear that KT tape. The tape was very helpful. I don't have tape on today, and I'm finding that it's okay, that I might go some days without the tape. I do think that when I do, because we're going to do a long ride on Saturday, I'm going to wear tape again. I just feel safer that way. I went on a ride this morning, a short ride, and I wore a brace. And the brace was nice. It was just a stretchy brace. With a, you know, a flexible panel where the kneecap is. And I wore that. I found the brace to be kind of heavy, but it definitely kept things in place. Guess what? The tape is better. in my opinion.
Yeah.
If you have a choice between a brace and getting a good taping that's appropriate to your situation, my suggestion is to go for the tape. I'm so impressed with kinesiology tape. Whether you get the KT tape brand or you get a brand that you get from your physical therapist, any which way, I recommend getting a tape for the activity that you need. If you're not getting a lot of physical activity, you might not need the extremely sticky stuff. I get the extremely sticky stuff that's appropriate to be worn in the pool because one of my things, well, first of all, I love to swim. I love to swim as cross training. And swimming was one of the things that all of my practitioners said, go in the pool, go swimming. So I did. And that was one of the things I did to keep me stable. I also continued to do exercises. For a while there, when the swelling was marked, I was told not to do anything that stressed my knee at all. So I had to stay off the bike for a week and a half. And then I went back to doing my knee stabilization exercises when it got a bit better. So I'm back to doing that. I went to a yoga class this weekend and I had to modify some of my activities because I can't bend the knee all the way. It's much better than it was, but I can't bend it all the way and I have to respect that. The other thing I have had regularly is chiropractic. I have a very good chiropractor who also, he keeps noticing that my meniscus was subluxing posteriorly and so he kept putting it back and probably because there were structures that were inflamed. But I was really worried that I tore something badly and it wasn't going to heal and I was going to be nursing this all the time. But that doesn't seem to be the case. I think I healed from this. It's really great. That doesn't mean that I'm going to go out and do, you know, hard intervals yet. Although I'm getting ready to start thinking about that. But I think the ship has sailed for 2018 on a century ride. Century ride's not going to happen this year.
Yeah, you're probably wise.
Yeah. Although I might do the long ride in October for the Farm to Fork Fondo. It will be flat, the one in New Jersey. It's in October, so we've got some time yet. I'm not going to do the 100-mile steeplechase. I'm going to do portions of the 100-mile steeplechase, but I will not ride 100 miles this year. So, and that's unusual for me. This is like the second year. Since 2005, I've done the 100-mile ride every single year except for that one year where it poured and we only did 30 miles. And this will be the second time that I'm going to do, you know, less than that. So the other thing I did was I backed down on my cycling. I stopped doing intervals. And the only riding I did was riding to maintain fitness. I increased my mileage to one long ride a week. And the long ride was in the 50s. And the rest of the rides were just rides to maintain fitness. So they were in the teens and 20s and that's it. Not excessively hard. All of those things help. So it's a combination of chiropractic, acupuncture, backing it down, so getting more rest, and going easier. And also there's the supplements, the big supplements I took. I took pyridoxal 5-phosphate, which is activated vitamin B6. And activated vitamin B6 is, vitamin B6 altogether is very good for bursitis. So I'm wondering if that helped. It would seem that when I would take the vitamin B6, the knee would feel better, you know, after I took it. So I think that was very helpful. And then I take magnesium regularly. And then I eat my veggies. That helps too. And sometimes I'll take curcumin and fish oil when I'm being good. But diligently, I took the magnesium and the vitamin B6, and I think those are really helpful. So that's what's going on with that. And I just want to say that if you have an injury and you respect the injury, it doesn't mean, depending on the injury, it doesn't mean that you have to completely get away from your activity. That a good thing to do is to figure out what activity you can do with the injury that's helpful and safe for the injury. I'm a big fan of water, and I do laps, and you don't have to do laps like me. You can get in the water and do exercises. You can get in the water and do in the therapy pool and do exercises there. You can find strengthening exercises that are appropriate for your injury. And you can get treatment. You can also go to see an orthopedic person, an orthopedic doctor who can do imaging and might plan exercises for you, might plan different medications. So there's many things that you can do. One thing that I, there's things I could have done that I didn't. I haven't been to a physical therapist. That would be helpful. I really should go to a massage therapist because there's all kinds of muscles around the knee that could probably use some love.
You'll see one this weekend.
That's right. I will. Right. But
Stacy will take care of you.
I know. Mm. And that's true. And yet, you know, Diane could take care of me.
You also have massage therapists in your office
in my
space.
Office, who will help me. I know. So, so that's something that I haven't really done a lot of, which is so silly because I really need massage badly. So,
yeah.
Anyway, so I'll see if I can make that happen.
You didn't mention one thing here, though, which I'd like to point out because I think this is probably one of the most impressive things that I've seen, and that is that you have to use single word. Patience.
Yes, right.
And you know, people tend to push it too soon, too hard, too soon.
Right.
And when they try to get back into it again, they end up causing more problems and damage and end up having the whole thing last longer because of it.
I'm actually starting to feel like I'm ready to go back to doing some intervals. So so next week, you know what I'm going to do?
I would do them with caution.
I'm not going to do them.
You're not going to do them.
I'm going to give it another week.
There you go.
Yep.
There you go.
Right.
And you don't need them. I mean, what are they going to do for you right now?
They'll make me ride the steeplechase faster.
Yeah, who cares?
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. Does that matter?
I don't know.
You're just going to stop at the rest stops and chat with everyone anyway.
It might matter to the cowtails. We'll see.
The cowtails.
Yes, cowtails. Martin and Lance.
Oh, right.
My cowtail buddies.
Yeah.
So we're gonna have a cobbled ride. Martin's going to ride the entire century. Lance is probably going to ride the 50 or the metric. I'm going to ride with Martin to We Like It, and then I'm going to get off my bike and drive. I'm going to plant a car, and I'm going to drive first to Woodstock and then to Eastford, and then I'm going to leave my car at Eastford and ride with him back. That's what I'm going to do.
Okay.
I don't know how many miles that is. It's probably a metric or less. I don't know.
Mm.
It doesn't matter. But I figured it wasn't wise to ride up to Woodstock, and it certainly wasn't wise to do County Road.
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably County Road and Bungay Hill are probably the ones you want to avoid.
Yeah. Yeah.
The last two monsters. Yeah.
Yeah. And if I feel like doing those, maybe later in the season, I'll go back on a ride and I'll do them specifically and not a century ride, but I'll do a ride to Woodstock. We're not gold ride.
Right.
Yeah. But County Road, that's a monster.
It's a big one. You know, I mean, you're climbing out of the Woodstock Valley. There's not very many easy ways to get out of there.
No, there really
isn't. The only really easy way to get out of there is the way we go in.
Yeah.
So that still adds a degree of difficulty because you still have to get out of there somehow.
Right,
because
it's a valley.
It's a valley.
And you have to climb out of it.
Yeah.
That's how that works.
Yeah,
so if you want to go to Woodstock.
It's pretty up there.
It is very pretty up there.
It's very nice.
And the Woodstock, the Baptist Church in Woodstock is amazing. They're wonderful.
Yeah, you like them.
Yes, and the one in Eastford, too. They're wonderful up there. They just are. Mm-hmm. So, and that steeplechase is coming up. You'll talk about that on your show. That'll be great.
Okay.
So I'm very pleased. So I just want you to know that taking the time and taking the patience and you know, and backing off and doing some good care, you can come back from injuries. Who knew? And the other thing I did was I listened to my practitioners. I allowed Dr. Suez, my chiropractor, to be the arbiter of how much I do and how fast I go and that sort of thing. And I let him, because I needed somebody to tell me. And when he told me, I listened to him. It was very good. All right. So the next thing I wanted to talk about was hormonal stuff. So for today, I wanted to talk about hot flashes. I haven't talked about them in a while, and it's probably a good thing to talk about. And if you're listening and you're a lady in your perimenopause, you're probably interested in what to do about your hot flashes. Isn't everybody? So anyway, hot flashes actually have a science. There's a science behind hot flashes. There's a reason why they happen. So it's a very interesting thing. What's going on when you're having hot flashes? Of course, you're having hormonal changes. The hormonal changes that you're having. Here's the thing about hot flashes, though. the reason for hot flashes is not entirely, like the mechanism is not entirely understood. We know that hot flashes are associated with reduced estrogen, because when you give estrogen to women who have hot flashes, their hot flashes get better. Also, if you give, if you do phytoestrogens, it can improve your hot flash status. If you have, if you get stuff to bond to estrogen receptors, you have less hot flashes. So, but the exact mechanism isn't entirely understood. I've heard theories that luteinizing hormone. So luteinizing hormone is the hormone that causes the follicle. When you're about to ovulate, you have a mature follicle that's about to open up, and the luteinizing hormone opens up the follicle so that you actually do the act of ovulating. And when your ovaries are not when your ovaries are not responding to the FSH and LH that your pituitary gland is producing, then those levels go way up, because your body goes, oh, there's not a response. So it increases the hormones, the FSH, follicle stimulating hormone, and luteinizing hormone. It increases the amounts of those things in hopes of waking up your ovaries. But, you know, if you're of a certain age, your ovaries are, you're done. You're not going to wake up anymore. No more ovulation. So they just kind of stay high. So there's a theory that LH itself, because it stimulates ovulation, it also causes vasomotor symptoms. And the vasomotor symptoms include dizziness, lightheadedness, sweating, this phenomenon where you sweat and then you stop sweating and you get cold. It's really delightful. Now, there's another theory that I have in front of me that first of all, your body temperature drops 1 degree Celsius during a hot flash, and it's one of misperception by the brain. So when there's less estrogen, the hypothalamus thinks that there's something wrong. And when there's less estrogen, it makes your hypothalamus think your body's too hot. So your body thinks it's too hot because there's not enough estrogen around. That's why that exactly happens is not clear. So the hypothalamus goes, all right, you're too hot. We're going to make you sweat so you can cool off. So the point is that, and your body, the hypothalamus drops your body temperature a degree, and it makes you sweat, so you cool off. And then your body temperature drops, and you sweat a lot, and then a lot of women, after they have a hot flash, they feel cold. I'm like, yep. So it's like, and that's really delightful when it's happening at night in bed, because you have the covers on, then you have a hot flash, take the covers off, and then you get cold, and you have to put the covers back on. It's a good time. So that's how that works. And that's, so depending on how intense that is, some women don't mind them at all because they only get a little bit warm. Some women who are cold all their lives welcome the opportunity to be a little bit warmer. Now, I tend to be a bit chilly, and I don't have the situation of I'm overall warmer. That has not happened to me. So basically, when I'm having a hot flash, I'm warm. When I'm not having a hot flash, I'm back to being my old, you know, somewhat chilly self. I'm not as cold as some people. You know, some people would be sitting in this room right now feeling pretty cold.
Like me.
And yeah, it's not super cold today,
not
though.
Horrible. But no. It's been colder in here, but it's not
yes,
too bad right now.
That's right. But no matter what time of year it is, we always bring extra clothes into the studio because it's usually pretty cold in here. We have a lot of sensitive equipment here that can't handle too much heat.
Right.
That's why.
And it also generates a lot of heat.
And generates a lot of heat. Right. Mm-hmm. That's true. Mm. So anyway, the lowered estrogen is the actual fact of that's the correlation. There's a correlation of low estrogen with hot flashes. And so that's why you have them. Only 75% of women even get them. And that's probably true in industrialized society. In societies where they live a much cleaner, healthier lifestyle, it's much higher, the percentage of women that don't get them. And so, well, because when they were interviewing years ago, when they were interviewing Mayan women about menopause, women who are living in a traditional Mayan community and living a traditional Mayan lifestyle, they just don't get hot flashes. So hot flashes are likely a function of stress. Because I know that I get more of them when I have higher stress in my life. if I'm stressed by, like, I'm tired and I'm burning the candle at both ends, what I really need is more rest, but I have to work a long work day, I'm more likely to get a hot flash during that long work day. I also find that when I get more exercise, I get less hot flashes. Believe it or not, in the hot summer, I get less hot flashes. You might think that that would be the opposite, but that's not what happens.
Maybe it's because you're exercising outside more or something like that. Would that be a factor?
I think that the exercise, the increased level of exercise, and the fact that the exercise is fairly intense and it's overall more intense than what I do in the winter, I think that has an effect. And probably what's going on there is, if there is a vasomotor element to this, if there is an element of the fight or flight system, when you get regular cardiovascular exercise, you're leveling out your fight or flight system. So you don't have the highs and you don't have the lows. And so you're a little bit less likely to get hot flashes. So I've noticed that when I've been exercising outside, and we've had these spells of this very high heat where we're in the 90s and stuff, I haven't been really getting hot flashes, which is very interesting. So getting regular exercise is one way to control your hot flashes. If you're not getting exercise, you might be more inclined to get them. And then there are other ways that you can help your hot flashes. So there's natural medicine ways. So the less stressed you are, so doing restorative activities, any kind of rest that you can get is going to help you to have less hot flashes. So, you know, the same old, getting adequate sleep, taking naps, going out and being in nature, and going for leisure walks in nature, and just sitting and being in nature, sitting by and rolling in the rushes down by the riverside, cuddling and snuggling, playing with your pets, meditation, yoga, tai chi. So anything that relaxes you, anything that you find relaxing. If you drink too much alcohol, you're going to be likely to get more hot flashes. Things that can bring on hot flashes can be spicy food, alcohol, food intolerances. All those things can make you more likely to have hot flashes. Anything that causes inflammation in your body can make you have more hot flashes. So if you're eating a food that isn't working for you, you might be more likely to get a hot flash. But eating excessively spicy food can do it too, but so can alcohol. And one of the things about alcohol is, if you drink excessive alcohol, alcohol suppresses estrogen. So what estrogen you do have left in your body won't be as bioavailable. One of the ways that you make estrogen when you no longer are menstruating is that your ovaries do have some effect of making some estrogen. You make some estrogen from your adrenal glands, and your fat makes estrogen. So one of the things that we menopausal ladies get frustrated about is the menopause 10. So a lot of people get the menopause 10, meaning you gain at least 10 pounds at menopause. Susan Weed says, leave it alone. You need that. You need the body fat. You need the body fat to make estrogen for you. And that estrogen helps to maintain your bone density, that when you're in perimenopause, especially, you shouldn't try to lose weight. You should just leave that menopause 10.
So what happens when you do? Because I know people who obsess about it and do.
Yes, they do. And they might not be as healthy. Their bone density might go down. They might not be eating as well. They might be crabbier because they're not going to have as much estrogen around.
We can't have that.
So one of the things that the fat does is it makes estrogen. And one of the things that's going on is you're not ovulating anymore, so you're not making estrogen.
Okay.
So you're not making as much estrogen. So if you get rid of a lot of your body fat, you're going to have less estrogen. That's just the way it goes. And yet, the frustrating thing is, when you tend to gain that weight in menopause, you tend to gain it around your middle, and you lose your curvy shape. And so that's frustrating to a lot of women, because it makes you look matronly.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
That's where you tend to gain it. So that's a topic for another day, how to deal with weight loss in menopause. So I really wanted to focus on hot flashes today.
Hey, do you know that I have a news flash here on hot flashes? Are you ready?
Okay.
Guess what else can cause hot flashes?
What?
Drugs.
Which ones?
Low depression drugs like fluoxetine.
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 Fluoxetine can cause hot flashes because they give it to people to prevent them. That's interesting.
They say this states that, and also Prozac
Prozac is fluoxetine.
Yeah, remember, Paxil, all that stuff.
So selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors.
Clonidine, blood pressure medication.
Yes, uh-huh.
Gabapentin.
Gabapentin, uh-huh.
Yeah, anti-seizure drug.
Yes.
And Brisdel.
Brisdel?
Yeah, a paroxetine formula specifically for hot flashes.
Brisdel can cause
Oh, these are treatments. I'm sorry. I'm reading the wrong thing. You're right. Oh. Sorry. Got that backwards.
Uh-huh. Yeah. That's why I thought it was strange what you were saying. So paroxetine, Brisdel is paroxetine. So the things you said, that's why I was a little bit confused by what you were saying.
Yeah. It was the other.
Brisdel is paroxetine. Sorry. It's also known as Paxil.
Mm.
So it's the same drug. So they're just marketing it under a different name to give it for hot flashes. So selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors are given sometimes. Fluoxetine was given the name Seraphim, and it's the same drug as Prozac. It's the same exact drug as fluoxetine, mm-hmm. and it was given to help with hot flashes. And I guess it helps some people. So that is a way that you can go, but then you have to. Then you're taking an SSRI, and do you really want to do that? It's interesting that I see this Brisdel. This paroxetine is given at 7.5 milligrams, so that's a low mm-hmm. dose. That's a lower dose than you usually use for depression. So why don't you go through that list again? The Brisdel is paroxetine, and the fluoxetine, and you said clonidine. Yes,
yep.
Clonidine is as you said, it's a blood pressure medication. It's a central nervous system depressant, so that makes sense because it's a vasomotor symptom that you're getting. And so because the central nervous system depressant, it's going to tend to make that whole system calm down. Does that make sense? If you want to go the pharmaceutical route, I'm telling you that there's some things you can do, like get regular exercise. Mm-hmm. If you don't eat a lot of junk, if you eat too much sugar and processed food and drink too much alcohol, you're going to get more hot flashes. So if you eat a lot of good, healthy fruits and vegetables and protein, that's going to help you. So let's talk about soy for a minute here. People worry about soy because soy has isoflavones in it. The isoflavones in soy have a similar structure to estrogen. They aren't estrogen, but their structure is similar enough that they can bond to and stimulate or block estrogen receptors. And they are what we think of as amphoteric. That means that because they can attach to estrogen receptors, they have an effect of both stimulating and blocking the receptors. They are not as strong as estrogen, so they can't stimulate your estrogen receptors like estrogen can. But because they can stimulate your estrogen receptors, they can make you feel better when you are more likely to have hot flashes. So if your hypothalamus sees some soy isoflavones, and because your hypothalamus has some estrogen receptors on it, if your hypothalamus sees some soy isoflavones, it might come down. So there are those who worry that you're going to be more likely to get breast cancer, that you're going to be more likely to, number one, get breast cancer, and number two, if you've already had breast cancer, stimulate breast cancer if you eat too much in the way of soy isoflavones. So what I am reading is that you shouldn't worry, and that places where they eat natural soy, where they have soy as part of the diet, mm-hmm. They eat it in traditional forms, things like edamame and tofu and tempeh and miso, like in Japan. They have a lower risk of breast cancer than people who don't eat those soy foods. So remember we went to that ramen place in Burlington, we had the edamame?
Yeah.
Wasn't that nice?
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah.
So, it's different.
Yeah. So I enjoy eating the edamame pods. I like soy, and you know, some people don't do well with soy. If you get gas and bloating from soy and you don't digest it well, you shouldn't eat it.
No, I was just going to say, don't eat it.
If a food makes you sick, even though it can be healthy for some people, but you don't feel good when you eat it, don't eat it. You heard that here. Even if a food is healthy, if it makes you sick or if you hate it, don't eat it. Now, if you hate all vegetables, that can be a problem. Then I would say find a way to like vegetables. Find a sauce. Find a way of cooking them. Find ones that you do like. So if you're like all vegetables are bad, Yuck. But if you dislike a few vegetables, like Ron and I, we just can't deal with Brussels sprouts, even though we know they're wonderful for you.
I know. Everyone tells me how great they are. Oh, wait, but if you have them the way I cook them, you'll love them. I hear, how many times have you heard that?
Yes. And it just doesn't work for us.
You know, it's just... No.
And we don't want to discourage you from eating Brussels sprouts because they're very, very good for you.
They're
they have
great
sulforaphanes.
For you.
They have compounds in them. They're cruciferous vegetables. They have sulforaphanes that are anti-cancer. They have vitamin C. They have wonderful fiber. They're very, very good for you. So if you like them or you found a way to cook them that you love, it's a good idea to eat Brussels sprouts.
Right.
But Ron and I, some people have taste aversions. They taste compounds
there's
in foods.
There's something wrong with the way they taste.
Well, to
I
us.
I don't know what it is. To me.
There's
to
nothing
me.
Wrong
right.
with them.
Right.
What it is you and I have a taste aversion. We have a taste and smell aversion. There's a flavor in them that you and I find aversive, and that's mm-hmm. what it is. Other people don't find them aversive, and if that's true, they ought to eat them. I've got the same problem with olives. You don't.
Right.
So you like olives. I can't even hold an olive in my mouth.
Right.
And yet I know how good they are for me. And, you know, they have wonderful monounsaturated fatty acids mm-hmm. and they have wonderful antioxidants in them. Mm-hmm. For some reason, I can deal with olive oil. Olive oil I can eat. I didn't used to be able to, but I can eat olive oil. But actual olives, blah, can't do them. Again, I want to say that's my problem. I have a taste aversion, and so I don't eat them. But if you do not, olives are very good for you.
Sure. They're,
and there's so many other vegetables and fruit that I have... Absolutely, that I delight in and I have no problem with.
Yeah.
So if that's your situation, you eat loads of produce, but there's a couple you don't like, don't worry about it. All right, so getting back to the soy. So soy has isoflavones in it, as I said, that can stimulate your estrogen receptors. And if you're having hot flashes, the thing about those isoflavones is they can bond to the estrogen receptors in your hypothalamus, and your hypothalamus will calm down. So your hypothalamus is not going to be as likely to get all fired up and think that you're hot and want to cool you off, so you'll be less likely to get the hot flashes. So if you're eating, you know, 1 to 3 servings of soy in your diet, and in my case, I don't even eat that much. But I do, you know, I used to worry about soy milk. Oh, soy milk's going to make it more likely for me to breast cancer. No, it's not. If I have a glass of soy milk a day, I shouldn't worry about that. And certainly if I added a little tofu or tempeh, I actually bought toasted edamame that, you know, that you can keep in the house and use as like you would use a nut. And I have them as a snack. They're a little dry. They probably need some flavoring because they're a little bland, but I still enjoy them. So that's another way to get the soy isoflavones in. Drinking soy milk would be another way to do that. And you can take soy isoflavones. You can also take isoflavones from red clover. Red clover also has isoflavones like genistein and diazin. Those are two of the isoflavones in soy. They're found in red clover as well. And soy and red clover are both legumes. They're both in the, you know, the bean family. And did you know that most legumes are poisonous?
No.
Yeah, they are. Most legumes are poisonous. But if you look at the vast majority of legume family, you're not supposed to eat them. So
really?
your vetches and your lupins and I think morning glories as well. They're a legume as well. Yeah, anything you see with a pod is probably a legume. So there's a lot of the ones that we're used to eating, they're the ones that we cultivate, and they're ones that are known to be just fine. So soy and your snap beans and snap peas and snow peas, they're all just fine.
Anything with a pod?
And pretty much most things with pods are
like milkweed.
Not everything. Oh, I don't know that. I'm not sure if milkweed
That's
is a
kind
legume.
Of a pod, isn't it?
Well, let's check.
But there are also some trees that create pods on them, too, and I can't think of what they are.
Not everything has a family. No, milkweed is a dogbane. It's not a...
Okay.
The dogbane's also known as the Asclepiadaceae. So, it's milkweed. It's, even though it has a pod, it's not. Mm. No, the legumes... legumes have a more specific kind of pod.
And there's that weird weed called jewelweed that has a pod also?
I don't know if jewelweed is a legume. The family is called either Fabaceae or Leguminosae. I don't know if jewelweed is a legume.
I'm thinking pods right now.
Yeah. Yes.
Just... because there's lots of things that grow in the woods that have pods, too.
Alexa, open the pod bay door.
Oh, she can't do that.
No, she can't do that. No. She's afraid that she can't do that.
Yeah.
So, Julie,
Siri can't either.
No, Siri can't either. I know. Mm. But you can ask her and she'll tell you that.
Mm-hmm.
But jewelweed is not a legume. It's a balsam.
Okay.
Yeah, it's the Balsamaceae family.
Hmm.
So, no.
How about that?
Yeah. And impatiens is also a balsam. Well, it, actually, jewelweed is an impatiens. It's impatiens capensis. But it is not a it is not a legume. So now you know. So some things with pods are legumes all have pods, but many things with pods are not legumes. Kay?
Okay.
Yeah. So now you know.
All right.
So there getting rid of your hot flashes. So eating a lot of protists. No, so by the way, isoflavones are a form of phytoestrogen. Phytoestrogens are estrogen. They are not estrogen. They are estrogen-like compounds that are found in plants. And if you eat a good survey of various kinds of fruits and vegetables, you're going to get phytoestrogens from all of them. Soy is particularly high in isoflavones. But if you eat beans in general are going to have isoflavones in them because they are the seed. They are the thing that the plant grows from. So estrogen is a growth factor. So you're going to have more phytoestrogens in beans and seeds because that's the place where the plant emanates from. So they're a good way to get your phytoestrogens. So if you eat nuts and seeds, you will also get phytoestrogens, and that can help your hot flashes as well. So if you want to know some other things that you can take, some supplements that you can take to help with hot flashes. So things that I have tried are Swedish. Swedish flower pollen is a really interesting one. So Swedish flower pollen comes from a particular plant, and it's a pollen that's extracted and concentrated. And if you take enough doses, that it has been shown to help to reduce your hot flashes. Swedish flower pollen extract can also help with benign prostatic hyperplasia if you have a swollen prostate and it's giving you trouble starting and stopping your flow of urine if you're a dude. So Swedish flower...
I'm a dude.
You are. So Swedish flower pollen extract can help with that. Now, Swedish flower pollen, some of these help with hot flashes, and they are not, in fact, phytoestrogens. Two examples of that are black cohosh and gamma linolenic acid. So black cohosh is a great thing. Some women take it. Women take the extract called remifemin, and that's a concentrate of black cohosh herb. And black cohosh isn't particularly phytoestrogenic. But it does help reduce hot flashes, and we think it's because of an anti-inflammatory effect that it has. Gamma linolenic acid, or GLA, is an omega-6 fatty acid that's a wonderful anti-inflammatory, and it's found in high quantity in evening primrose oil and borage oil, and black currant oil is also black currant seed oil is also thought of as a way to get gamma linolenic acid, but the yield of gamma linolenic acid isn't as high. It seems that the yield is quite high in borage oil, more even than evening primrose oil, and yet evening primrose oil may have some cofactors to make it a better delivery system, because we find that women will take evening primrose oil and it really helped their hot flashes. So there's a neat thing that I was made aware of, and that's that there's a fermented soy extract that you can get, and it's got a... it's got a brand name. And so it's a fermented soy extract. That's a supplement that you can get at the health food store from your naturopath. And that tends to work particularly well. I must say in the summer, I just don't get as much in the way of hot flashes. So I think it's a combination of things. One of them is the intense exercise and the sweaty exercise that happens outdoors. And I wonder if I just eat more of a variety of produce. I mean, we definitely eat produce
in
the wintertime.
There is another solution to them, too, you know, when you get the hot flashes in the middle of the night. Just throw the covers across the room.
Yeah.
And rip them off the bed.
Does that happen?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
I've experienced that.
Uh-huh. That's good. Mm. It's like when you're wearing a mouth guard. And you wake up in the morning and you find that the mouth guard is on the other side of the room.
Right.
And you just don't know how it got there. Yeah. That happens.
Yeah.
It's a funny thing.
Yeah. Yeah,
then, it's a funny thing. So other things, so there's just some practical matters, and this is something we ought to attend to before too long, and that's that I need a ceiling fan above my bed.
Yeah.
Because when I stay at Nancy's and when I stay at Mommy's, I get a ceiling fan.
Yeah.
We need one for above the bed.
Yeah.
Then that thing where the
coming
covers wind
soon.
Up. Yeah.
I can do that. Okay. I can do that.
Yeah, we need the ceiling fan.
That's a simple thing.
So you'll be less likely to have that experience of the covers being thrown across the room. So these are practical, immediate ways to cool off. You have to figure out the clothing thing. Do you want to wear more wicking clothing? Do you want to wear more tank tops? Do you want to wear something you can pull on and off easily? So there's practical matters that way. Then there's the idea of peppermint oil. And I keep forgetting to do this because this is some things I like to do in the immediate, have them on my desk. So if I'm having a hot flash, I can tell my patients, oh, I'm sorry, I'm having a hot flash, and I'll do something for myself. And one of them is that you can get a spray bottle with a little bit of water and a bunch of peppermint oil. You drop some peppermint oil into it, and then you spray your face. It's nice and cooling and refreshing, and it smells good.
How about that?
Yeah. And then I just keep a hand fan, not an electric fan, but a flip fan.
Yeah.
You know, by my desk. I bought a pretty one, and I'll just pull it out, and I'll wave
it
myself.
It's important that it's a pretty one.
Yes. Why not? It's pretty. So, and you can get those inexpensively. And you can get them online. I got mine at a gift shop in Florida. Because I love to go to Venice Avenue and shop on Venice Avenue. And I found a little gift shop and they happened to have them. The next time I went, they didn't have them. I was disappointed. But I keep one on my desk and I fan myself. And if a patient gets hot, I'll fan them.
Yep.
For them. You can also get little electric fans. You can get big electric fans or little electric fans, whatever you can.
You can get fans that plug into your USB port
on your
computer.
Little tiny desk ones.
Yeah.
Yeah, and those are a great thing.
Yeah.
They just cool you off.
For people who need to get cooled off.
Sure.
Right. Mm.
So those are all great solutions. So there you go. So I'll encourage you to, if you're having hot flash issues, I'll encourage you to get more exercise and, make sure you do sweat, get some rest.
Drink a lot of
water. Do some restorative activities, drink more water, and watch your processed food. And do enjoy the amazing produce that's happening right now. There's end of terrific produce. August is just such a wonderful harvest month.
It really is.
Unless you're soy intolerant, it's okay to have some soy. You're not going to have to worry about cancer unless you're pounding tons of soy at every meal. But if you're having a glass of soy milk in the morning and you're having a serving of tempeh or tofu later in the day, or you're snacking on some edamame, don't worry about it. I don't think you need to worry about it. Most people do not need to worry about it. If you're getting digestive upset from soy, then don't eat it. There's other things you can do. So we said, evening primrose oil, borage oil, spray yourself with peppermint oil, have a fan nearby, have an overhead fan. The other thing we didn't talk about was bioidentical hormones. So we like to leave that as lower down on the list, because if you can fix it without actually taking hormones, that tends to be better, only because we do worry that if you put hormones on board when nature is telling you, all right, it's time to have less of those hormones, that may not be the best thing for you. However, some women do small amounts of bioidentical hormones and it really helps. And for women who are absolutely miserable, it's really the way to go. And, you can get a good practitioner who can help you first with natural progesterone and can help you with the smallest amount of the heavier estrogens, the E1 and the E2, which are more potent, balanced by estriol, which is not as potent. And those things can all help to reduce your hot flashes. So you want to get a good practitioner who can. Then those are prescription. Well, estriol and progesterone at low strengths are not prescription. They're over the counter. So a naturopath can help you with that. And you can get those over the counter at health food stores. But if you want to nail the dose to absolutely precisely and get good delivery systems, it's probably a better idea to get a sympathetic prescribing doc who's familiar with prescribing bioidentical hormones. So there you go. So that's where we're at in terms of hot flashes. I'll keep you posted on how mine go if I find something else really exciting. But one of the big things I found in the last year was this nice product that was the fermented soy product. I found that really good. Okay. So you have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the call-in talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host Ron Meniza. You can also email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org. You can also leave questions or comments at my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at FranStorchND. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM. WHUS Stores.